Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's the premiere episode of Game On with Cody and John. This episode's big deal is Gen Con 2008. The cool stuff we saw, the people we met, the games we played.
And on this episode's By Trier and I, Battlestar Galactica, the board game.
We've got a copy.
And we'll tell you all about it.
On the premiere episode of Game On with Cody and John.
Howdy gamers, this is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Hey, welcome to the first episode of Game On with Cody and John. This is a podcast about all kinds of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, role-playing games, from two guys who just absolutely love to play games, and we're coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, which we have declared to be
the gaming capital of the world. I mean, obviously.
Absolutely.
We've got Gen Con, and we're here, so that's good enough for me.
You know, it seems like it's a pretty good combination. And so we just want to talk to you real quickly about some of the segments that you're going to see every episode of Game On with Cody and John. And the first thing that we're going to talk about is the Game On Inbox. And every episode, we're going to use the Game On Inbox as our main segment for gaming news, news around the industry. And it's also going to be the place where we will read and talk about listener feedback and questions. And hey, we really want a lot of listener feedback from you guys.
Yeah, without you guys, we're just two nerds talking in a bedroom right now, you know?
Exactly. So we really do covet your feedback, and so we're going to be soliciting that a lot.
And then our main segment will be the big deal. Now, each week, the big deal could be an interview, it could be about an event, or whatever we want it to be. It's going to be the big deal for the episode.
Hey, what's the big deal this week?
Well, the big deal this week is going to be Gen Con 2008. Everything we did there, the ups, the downs, and everything in between.
That sounds like a good start to me.
I had fun.
And the other thing that you're going to see in every episode of Game On is a segment called Buy, Try, or Deny. And this is going to be a detailed game review, either a board game, a card game. We may even throw in a role-playing game, too. But we want to be able to help you guys out there make a good decision about a game purchase. And so you'll see a detailed review every episode.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, so hey, but you know, as we said, we will always get things started with the Game On Inbox, and that starts right now. It's time for the Game On Inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find. All right, well, welcome to the Game On Inbox here on the premiere episode of Game On. You know, since it's our first episode, we're not going to really get into a whole lot of gaming news, or definitely not feedback, because it's the first episode. Our Game On Inbox is currently empty. I know. But, you know, not for long, hopefully.
Hopefully.
So what we're going to do is, at the very beginning here, since a lot of you listeners don't really know us or who we are, is we're going to just kind of give you a little background as to who we are individually, and what we do, and how we got into gaming. So I'm going to go ahead and start off and just turn it over to Cody, and tell us a little bit about yourself, Cody.
Okay, I'm Cody. I'm 25, Aquarius. I like long walks on the beach. That's what you want, right?
That wasn't quite what we were going for, okay. But yeah.
I'll just roll with it, okay.
Sure, yeah. Aquarius, huh?
Aquarius, yeah. Today, at least.
Nice.
Okay, like I said, I'm Cody. I'm 25. I'm engaged, no kids, kind of starting out. As far as gaming is involved, I really first got into it when I was in about the 8th grade playing Magic. A bunch of friends in my neighborhood learned the game, got me into it. I invested a lot of money for being in 8th grade into Magic. And being the gateway drug that it is, that kind of rolled into Dungeons & Dragons and the group I'm currently involved in. And just through that, through going to Gen Con and other conventions, I got involved in other non-standard board games and card games. I think Talisman was the first non-standard board game I got into.
Wait a minute, non-standard board games, do you mean like Monopoly, the Lost Edition?
Yeah, the Lost Edition or Monopoly or Yahtzee or things like that.
Maybe. Oh, I love those kind of games.
Oh, they're fantastic. Hey, Monopoly's not bad. But anyway, and through that I met John here, and we've been playing weekly since we've met, really.
Yeah, it's been really great to get to know Cody. And as far as I'm concerned, my name is John. I am 31 years old, and I am married. I have two children, a 5-year-old boy and a 2-year-old little girl. I work as a research scientist for a local pharmaceutical company. And as far as gaming goes, sort of like Cody, but a little bit later in life, I started playing Magic the Gathering when I was in college and got together with just some friends to play that. And I'd never played anything like that before. It's mostly been things like Monopoly and Scrabble in my childhood. And so I just love that game. I actually kind of got out of that as I finished college and started my career. And when I moved to Indianapolis, I had some friends at work that told me about a convention called Gen Con, which I had never heard of before. And so 4 years ago, I started going just on a Saturday. And that's just sort of been the springboard that I've kind of dove into gaming. And so I've become very much interested in especially hobby board games, Euro games, as well as what might be termed Ameritrash games.
Woo!
Yeah, Cody, you'll learn that Cody has a special place in his heart for Ameritrash games, and
they are the better games
due to the dice, right?
Oh yes.
So, but also you know, card games and some role playing games. I got in a little bit of D&D, and most recently Cody's been running a game of the Hollow Earth Expedition, which I'm sure that if you listen to a few episodes, we're going to talk about Hex a good bit, because it's a great game.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And folks, he is a scientist, so you have to believe everything he says, just going forward.
Exactly, because all scientists speak truth at all times.
That's what I've learned.
Oh, well, yeah. So anyway, now that you know a little bit more about us, we want to talk a little bit about this podcast. And what we want to do, and sort of the way we want to present ourselves to you, the listener, is we want to be the podcast for the common gamer. And Cody, why don't you tell us a little bit about what that means?
Well, that comes from, we're just two guys. We don't have a lot of gaming street cred, as the kids would say. We're just two guys who love games. We don't follow the gaming awards or do a bunch of game reviews as other people would do.
Yeah, I you know, I've never written an article for a gaming magazine. I've never helped to write an RPG module. You know, and the folks that do those things, I mean, we wouldn't have a gaming industry without those folks.
Definitely.
But Cody and I just wanted to start this podcast because we just feel like we're sort of the voice of the everyday gamer who has a job and who has a wife and kids or a girlfriend and just has other things going on in their lives. And gaming is not our life, but it is an important part of our life.
A very important part, yeah.
And so we just want to present that to you. And that's the perspective that hopefully you'll get every episode from us is we just want to play games that are fun, and we want to find those games that we think are fun and present them to you.
Definitely. We want to connect to you, and one of the ways we're going to connect to you is through the Game On inbox.
That's right. And so if you ever have any feedback or any questions for us, any good jokes to tell or any, I don't know, online game deals or whatever, send them to gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep. And so if you want to just send us some feedback as to what you think of this episode, we sure would appreciate it. And also, kind of leading into this, we want to talk to you about our very first contest.
Oh, boy.
Because there's no better way to get listeners than to give away free stuff.
Bribery is results.
So what we want to do for this contest, all you have to do is send us an email and tell us what your favorite game is.
That's it.
I mean, that's really easy. All you have to do is just, you know, open up a new message, say what your favorite game is, and hit send.
So if I were to do that for you, John, if you wanted to enter this contest, what would you put as your favorite game?
As of today, and for probably the last 2 years, my very favorite game is Descent Journeys in the Dark by Kevin Wilson and Fantasy Flight Games.
Fantastic game.
What about you, Cody?
Any game not called Carcassonne would be fine by me.
Well, what about the Carcassonne expansions?
No, John.
Oh, okay. All right. One question you may be asking is, well, John, what am I going to win if I enter this contest?
Well, John, what am I going to win if I enter this contest?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Cody. You're going to win a copy of a game that we love. We're going to ask you to tell us about the game that you love. So we're going to offer you a game that both Cody and I really love, and that is the fantastic and sentimental favorite,
Ink and Gold.
That's right, Ink and Gold by Sun River Games, also distributed by Fun Again Games. It's a really great card game that is sort of a push-your-luck. I wouldn't call it a strategy game, but it's a great filler and just a ton of fun. It's one of our favorites. We can always pull it out and have a great time with it. So a brand new copy of Ink and Gold to the person that we select. We're just going to put all the names in a big hat, and or it might be a small hat if we don't give very many people.
It will be some sort of hat.
It will be a hat of
hopefully
some sort.
Larger than smaller.
Exactly. And we will select a winner, and on the next episode of Game On with Cody and John, we'll tell you who the winner is. And we'll have another contest for you, too, because we just like to give stuff away.
We are the podcast for you, the people.
Absolutely.
Well, let's go ahead and close the Game On inbox for this episode and head right into this episode's big deal.
And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal burning question, what's the big deal? All right, well, welcome to the big deal. This episode's big deal is Gen Con 2008. We just got back from 4 to 5 days of packed gaming.
It's
goodness.
Really five now.
It's really
it's getting closer to six.
I know. It's gotten to the point where it's almost an entire week. And we have just a ton of stuff that we would like to talk about and discuss regarding the convention. So we got a whole list of stuff sitting here. What do you say we get right into it, Cody?
Hey, let's do this.
All right, the first thing we want to talk about is new products and all the great stuff that we saw in the dealer hall. Gen Con has an absolutely enormous...
Gargantuan.
It's gotten bigger every year, it seems.
It seems like it.
And it's just an amazing dealer hall with just dozens upon dozens of booths. They've added a pretty big section the last couple years of electronic gaming, so...
Yeah.
Well, you know...
The kids like it.
Those crazy kids with their video games.
That's right.
But, you know, Cody and I stick more to the board game, card game, role-playing game section, so... First thing I would like to just talk about is the Fantasy Flight Games booth this year.
Our good friends over there.
Fantasy Flight is, of course, the great manufacturer of all kinds of themed board games and card games, and they're even getting into miniature and role-playing games now. And I got to say that I think that their booth was absolutely the highlight of the dealer hall this year.
That thing didn't end. I saw it walking into the dealer's hall. I'm like, oh, you know, I'll go take a look at it. That thing just... stretched around and around. I didn't see any end to it.
Yeah, and the thing that I loved the most about it was that the whole booth was full of tables. It wasn't just you know, some big open space with a bunch of salesmen standing around trying to sell you something. You could tell that this company came and they wanted you to game.
Yeah.
And so they had tables set up not only with their current releases, but they had a whole bunch of brand new releases. They even had a prototypes that they weren't even just doing partial demos for them. They were doing full game play tests of those things in the dealer hall.
Yeah, I mean, it was very gaming centric. The actual storefront for them was very small, I think. I mean, that was comparable to years past, but they just had this sprawling area of game designers running their own games for people. And like you said, John, they were running full games. I mean, we're not talking about a 3-turn demo, you know, 2-3 hour demos
right
here.
Right. And, you know, some of the great prototypes that I saw while I was there at their booth, the Age of Conan board game, they had a kind of a mock-up of that with some, you know, painted pieces. That looked pretty cool. One of the highly anticipated games that's supposed to come out around the holiday season this year is the remake of Cosmic Encounter, which is a classic board game, one of the first board games to introduce the concept of having a races or you know, traits that sort of break the rules, kind of what has been expanded upon by games like Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition, you know, different races and things like that. So Kevin Wilson, who is the designer of Descent.
And a friend of the podcast.
And a friend of the podcast. Well, we should probably call him and ask him if he's a friend of the podcast.
We'll ask him.
We'll work that out later.
We played in a game with Kevin, a Descent game in 07.
Yep, and he was in fact our overlord.
He was our overlord and thrashed us soundly.
Yeah, well, Kevin was also one of the lead designers for the remake of Arkham Horror that Fantasy Flight has done, and he is the lead designer for this remake of Cosmic Encounter, and it just looks like a really cool cool remake from the folks that I talked to that did a demo of it. They say that it's very faithful to the previous editions. I've never actually played the game, and by the time I got to the dealer table on Sunday, Kevin said that he had finished his last demo, so I just missed getting a demo of that. But
and I didn't see him leave that table the entire con. I mean,
yeah,
he was working it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's one of the great things about Gen Con, and it's a great thing about Fantasy Flight as well, is that these designers whose names are on the game box, like Corey Konietzka and Kevin Wilson, these guys aren't off in some green room somewhere sipping Chablis. They've got their Fantasy Flight name tags on, and they're standing there all day long running games and doing demos. And that is one of the neatest things I think about Gen Con, is being able to go up to the designers of the games that you love and talking to them, shaking their hand, and not just for a second. You can actually have a conversation with them. It's really neat.
And they have Fantasy Flight does have the best bags at Gen Con.
Yeah.
You put a body in there. I mean, I don't condone putting a body in there, but
we had a friend who went and bought literally like the travel edition of Ingenious. The box is really tiny, and they gave him one of those gargantuan bags to go along with it. So they just said it was great advertising, and it's true. I mean, you saw the Battlestar Galactica logo on one side, and the I think it's the Game of Thrones card mm-hmm. game on the other side. So
absolutely.
I ended up with two of those bags. So also one of the big booths that was there was big companies that's always at Gen Con is Privateer Press.
Yar.
They make games like War Machine and Hordes as far as miniatures games go. And they were premiering a new collectible miniatures game this year called Monsterpocalypse. Yeah. And it looked pretty cool. The demo tables were full nearly the entire convention. Miniatures are really colorful, and the dice are even really colorful. So I mean, it looked kind of cool. I sort of looked over the shoulder of some folks that were doing some demos, and the gameplay looks interesting.
There's even miniature buildings, because it's a very Godzilla-like.
Yeah,
two monsters just beating the poo out of each other.
And I think that the buildings have some kind of stats on them. I'm not sure what you use those for, but that might be something worth checking out if you're interested in collectible miniatures games.
I know it sold out every day.
Really?
And for each day's allotment sold out.
Yeah, so that was a real big seller, and I think that's going to be probably released in full sometime in the fall. One booth that I made sure to go to on the very first day of the convention was the Flying Frog Productions booth. And that was mainly to pick up a copy of the game A Touch of Evil.
Just a touch,
the Supernatural game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game that is actually, we're going to feature that on our Buy, Try, or Deny segment in episode 2 of Game On with Cody and John. So stay tuned for that. We'll have a full review of that game. But this is their second game they put out. The first one was Last Night on Earth, which is a fantastic zombie game.
Yeah, if it's anything like that, they've got a good track record. I mean, they jumped headfirst in with the theme for Last Night on Earth, and if from what I've seen of this, it's more of the same, so hopefully it's a worthy successor.
Yeah, I've been told that it could almost be termed like Arkham Horror Light, which that sounds like
not a problem
to me.
Yeah.
So we'll be checking that one out next week at our gaming table, and we'll be bringing that review to you.
One other note from Paizo, they're the ones keeping the kind of the 3.5 rules of Dungeons and Dragons alive and well with their Pathfinder system. And when I first heard about it, I was very skeptical. I'm like, people are going to want to move on. They're not going to want to play third party old editions of D&D, and I was wrong. They had the beta edition of their rules in print, not even the final version, sold out. I mean, just instantly. And there were just lines forming around it, and it was the talk of the convention, at least around that side.
Yeah, absolutely. That looks like that's going to be an exciting set of rules there, an exciting system.
They're giving Wizards a run for their money.
Yeah. So that was kind of an overview of the dealer hall. We of course there was tons more booths. Those are just some of the highlights that we saw. But that wasn't all that we did at Gen Con. It wasn't just perusing the dealer hall. There was lots of gaming to be done outside the dealer hall. And one of the most popular events at Gen Con, and one of the things that Cody and I enjoy the most as a part of our Gen Con experience, is a thing called True Dungeon. And Cody actually has a lot of additional experience with that, since that's one of the things he does every year is to volunteer at True Dungeon. So, Cody, I'll go and hand it over to you, and you tell us a little bit about True Dungeon.
Alrighty, True Dungeon. It's not False Dungeon, as you may have heard. It is an interactive experience that simulates a kind of like a dungeon crawl in Dungeons and Dragons or any other fantasy type role playing games. It's about a 2.5 hour event. It's not a LARP, but it does involve a lot of hands on activity. Basically, you and your party, which is a group of 7 other people, you each pick a character class: bard, fighter, cleric, wizard, etc. And you go into this dungeon and solve puzzles, and sometimes fight monsters. The puzzles are very hands-on. Theme is a huge thing. It's like one of the rooms, for example, this year we had to use teamwork and just a lot of manual dexterity to figure it out. Whereas in another room, we had to kind of just put our heads together and just solve what essentially was a glorified Sudoku puzzle. But the theme is played out to the hilt. I mean, there's very low lighting. They have just top shelf level of props, and NPCs are kind of in costume. There's no actual combat with the boffer weapons. You're not, you know, swinging a piece of foam at a mind flayer, but they do combat in an interesting way with a shuffleboard mechanic, which you kind of have to see to really get, but it works for what it is.
Yeah, and that's probably a point to emphasize, is the fact that I know that when non-gamers think of things like Dungeons and Dragons, a lot of times they get this idea of, oh, you're putting on a robe and going out in the woods and hitting each other with fake swords. And so a lot of the non-gamers I've described True Dungeon to, I think that's the image that they get in their head, you're dressing up like in a costume and going into the dungeon. But maybe there is a slight element of that. And our group, actually, we did dress up in some costumes to kind of enhance the experience. But it really is very professionally done. I mean, from a non-gamer, if you want to talk about it from a non-gamer perspective, the closest thing I can think of is it's almost like a haunted house. But it's much more interactive than that, and really, based upon the D&D rules.
Yeah, the atmosphere you get, each room is timed. You only have 12 minutes to either defeat the monster, solve the puzzle, figure out the room. If you don't, your party will take damage. You get to move on. The idea being you can miss a puzzle or two and be okay, but I mean, if you just are missing puzzles every other room, you're not going to make it.
Right, because I think if you miss a puzzle, the room deals you damage, right?
Yeah, it's like jets of fire hit you for damage as you jump through the trap or what have you.
Right.
And it gets almost stressful, like a real kind of a dungeon situation. You're like, okay, guys, we got to figure this out. We don't have a lot of time. Let's do this if this doesn't work, et cetera, et cetera. And you find yourself really getting into it. Like, yeah. I mean, not saying, you get in character, like, prithee, we must disarm the trap.
The admission price for the True Dungeon Run is, I guess, pretty steep. It's mm-hmm. At about, I think it's, was it $38
this year? $38 this year.
And, it's kind of edged up in price every year. Of course, they're definitely using the money to put back into the adventure. It gets more and more impressive from a visual and an audio standpoint every year.
Definitely.
Some people might balk at that price, but I would really encourage you, if you're coming to Gen Con in future years and you want to have just a great experience, it's more than really just a game. It's like a 2 to 2.5 hour fully immersive experience, then I'd really recommend that.
Definitely check it out. And they're actually, the folks at True Dungeon are doing a True Dungeon Director's Cut in early April of 2009 at their home base in Carbondale, Illinois. We'll have more information on that with a link in the show notes, but definitely worth something to check out. It's always my favorite event at Gen Con, and check it out. Now, you did an event for the first time this year, based off another podcast?
Yeah, actually, on Friday night, I was able to attend an event called the Spielathon. And that's put on by two podcasters who do a podcast called The Spiel. So Stephen Conway and David Coulson are the podcasters who do The Spiel. Focuses mainly board games. And so they were having an event in the Rio Grande Games.
Rio Grande.
I honestly don't know how it's pronounced. I should have asked Jay Tummelson, the founder of the company.
I'm probably wrong, but I like Rio Grande.
Okay, Rio Grande.
Continue.
Well, I live in Texas, so Rio Grande makes sense. So they had this this big open gaming event, and one of the main goals was to raise money for their nonprofit foundation that they've started called the Spiel Foundation. And the goal is for them to be able to provide new games to senior citizen centers and children's hospitals, folks who might not have access to good games or might enjoy that sort of diversion. And so they were able to raise at the Spielathon over $700.
Nice.
And which will buy a lot of games.
Definitely.
So I had a great time at that, and one of the things that motivated me to want to start this podcast was listening to the Spiel. And Steven and Dave are both great guys, and they're really good podcasters. And so I was just really inspired by them, so I just wanted to give them a little bit of love on the show here. And we'll have a link to their website in our show notes. So
as soon as you're done listening to us, of course, and subscribe to us.
Exactly, yeah.
By all means, go over
exactly.
and check out
after
the Spiel.
After you go and tell all of your friends about our podcast and have them subscribe as
and
well.
And enemies.
Right, yeah, we don't care. But I just do want to give a warm thank you to Steven and Dave for their inspiration and for their help. And we're really glad to be a part of your community.
Definitely. Now, John, when you were mentioning all the different cool booths you saw, I couldn't help but notice you missed a rather big one. You want to tell us about that?
Oh, well, if by that you mean the Wizards of the Coast booth, that was because, yeah, not really worth mentioning this year.
Not great.
Not great at all.
Yeah, they one of their big products on the role-playing side was the new 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons Forgotten Realms campaign guide. A lot of people clamoring for this one. Now, how many copies would you think they would bring to the premier gaming convention of the year?
Well, given the size of Wizards of the Coast, I would say it would, and the popularity of Dungeons and Dragons, and the release of a brand new edition this year, I don't know, 1,000 at least.
You'd think so. 150.
150
for a 4-day convention.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah, and not to mention their booth in general is usually, you know, they've had huge tanks in the past and big sprawling banners that took over the exhibit hall. They were just kind of crammed in a corner, and it was like a tomb for most of it that I saw.
Yeah, it was really depressing. I did run in on Thursday to get my promotional HeroScape figure from the booth there, and I was just amazed by how sparse their booth was. And I mean, you know, I know economic times are tough, and there might be various reasons why they would go a little bit more Spartan this year with their booth, but you know, it just seems strange to me because this is the year when they're releasing 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, a new edition of D&D, and for those that have played it, it's a very different edition. It's not just like, you know, Facts and Errata or anything. It's a wholesale change in how the game
they're
is played.
They're taking it in a different direction, and yeah. It was kind of a sorry showing. I usually like a lot of what Wizard puts out, but not a great year for them.
I felt like it should have had a lot more 4th edition love, and it didn't. So, Wizards, sorry guys, I think you could have done more this year. I'm just saying, you know,
should have stepped it up.
Yeah. So overall, I think a fantastic Gen Con. Cody, what were your overall impressions of this year's con? You know, kind of in comparison to previous years.
Sure, I had fun this year. I don't know if I had quite as much fun as other years. I didn't try a lot of new games out, and I think next year I'm really going to try and kind of spread myself around as gaming goes, because I felt like I just really focused on just a couple things this year, and I didn't really sample everything that was there.
Well, and you kind of had a lot on your mind this convention, didn't you?
I did.
It was a little bit of an event that occurred during the convention.
I did. I proposed to my girlfriend, Kaylin, and somehow she said yes, so
yay.
So we have a gamer wedding, I guess, coming up next year. So maybe that had a lot to do with it. I did have a lot on my mind, but it was a good year. It's always fun at Gen Con. It's just going to be even better next year.
Yeah, I think so. Buy, try, or deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store shelf. So let's get started. Thank you. Well, this episode we're going to be talking about Battlestar Galactica, the board game.
So say we all.
So say we all. Definitely, I think, the highlight purchase of mine of Gen Con 2008. On Thursday, right when the dealer hall opened, I went to a couple of booths real quickly and then made my way to the Fantasy Flight area, the giant booth in the middle. I saw lots of games being demoed, and I was really excited to see the Battlestar Galactica board game being demoed. So I'm like, great, I'll get a chance to play it. And then, as I was standing there, I looked over to my right, and I saw that I was standing next to a 6-foot mountain of Battlestar Galactica, the board game, actual copies for sale, with a black scrim over top of it saying, going on sale at 2 p.m. So I rushed back and got my copy. Bottom line is, they only had 200 copies of this game for sale at the convention, and I got one.
We got it. We're talking about it.
So we're really excited to get this game. It's been really anticipated. We've been wanting to play it. I'll go ahead and tell you that Cody and I are both huge fans of the new Battlestar Galactica television series. You know, so purchasing this game was really a no-brainer for us. But I know there's plenty of games based on TV shows that are absolutely terrible. 24, the board game, comes to mind.
My expectations were set very low. I just I got very Battlestar Galactica fanboy, saw the box, and said, ooh, let's try it.
Right, so we were going to buy this anyway, but being that it was Fantasy Flight, Corey Konietzko, who's the designer of StarCraft, the board game, definitely some things in its favor. And you know, we were definitely not disappointed. So even if you've never watched the TV show, give this review a listen, because we think that this is a game that's great for, you know, fanboys and fangirls of the show, and also people who've never heard of the show. So we're going to start with just an overview of the Battlestar Galactica universe. For those of you who have never watched the show, I'll just give you just a real basic background that'll give you a framework for the game. So in the Battlestar Galactica universe, the human race populates a system of planets that are called the 12 Colonies of Kobol. And as the story goes, these humans created machines called Cylons to perform tasks for them. And these were like big clunky metal robots. The Cylons evolve, and then they decide to rebel against humanity, launching a big war between the two races. Following the war, the Cylons leave to inhabit another planet. And apparently they had a bit of a grudge, because 40 years later they return and proceed to completely destroy all of the colonies, nuking the entire human race out of existence, except for a small fleet of spaceships that manage to escape the attack. So this group of ships, which contains all of humanity now, is led and protected by the Battlestar Galactica, which is a big, chunky warship.
Not just a clever name.
Not just a clever name. And so now the fleet of ships is on a journey to find a new home, and that home is going to be a planet called Earth that is talked about in their mystical polytheistic scriptures. So they are able to use their faster-than-light or FTL drive to jump from one location in space to another.
Think hyperspace from Star Wars, or warp speed from Star Trek.
Or hyperactive from Spaceballs.
I like hyperactive. They've gone to plaid.
So in the meantime, the Cylons are constantly chasing them, hoping to destroy the whole rest of humanity before they reach their destination. One twist in this whole thing is that now some of the Cylons have evolved to look just like humans. And so you never quite know who's a Cylon and who isn't. All right, so Battlestar Galactica, the board game, is what they would call a semi-cooperative game, where each player is either a human or a Cylon. And the twist is that you may actually start the game as a human and find out halfway through that you're really a Cylon sleeper agent.
Yeah, and that's connected in the show, because without giving too much away, there are some characters who eventually realize they've been a Cylon the entire time, and they've just kind of woke into that programming, so to speak.
Right. And so that's a real important element of the game. And so your goals in the game are going to differ depending on what team you're on, the humans or the Cylons. If you're a human, then your goal is going to be to reach Kobol, an ancient planet that contains the map to Earth. This is accomplished by jumping a total of at least 8 distance points and then making one final jump. If you're one of these Cylons, you have a whole big list of ways that you can win the game, or that the humans can lose. You can win the game if Galactica is destroyed by enemy fire. If the humans run out of any of the 4 main resources, those resources are food, fuel, morale, and population. Or if you manage to get a Cylon Centurion onto Galactica's bridge to destroy it from the inside. So lots of ways for the humans to lose and the Cylons to win in this game.
Frackin' Cylons.
Frackin' toasters. So let's talk for just a brief moment about the game components. The nice thing about a Fantasy Flight game is that it's usually a very, very highly produced, well-made game.
You know it.
Mm-hmm. And this game is no exception. You're going to get a really nice board with the game that has a depiction of the Battlestar Galactica with some open space around it. On the board, there's also the Colonial One, and there's some areas for the Cylon players as well, just Cylon locations. The most innovative part of the board is that at the top right of the board, there are four dials. These are actually cardboard, pressed cardboard dials that you assemble onto the board permanently that will keep track of the different resources in the game.
Yeah, and they're sturdy. They're not coming off real easy. Once you get them on, they're going to stay there a while.
Yeah, and so I thought it was really an interesting mechanic that as these resources are dialed down, because they're usually not going up, you can actually see real easily on the board what's going on with those.
And it really helps add to the theme of the game. I mean, just kind of has this is just a very gritty look, and once you get into the critical levels of each resource, it turns red, and it's just very... It really helps get you into the whole mindset of the game.
Yeah, real thematic. So you're also going to get some character tokens. They made a decision when producing this game that they weren't going to make detailed plastic miniatures for the character tokens. Instead, they have the pressed cardboard chits with photos of the actors who play the characters on the show. And then they have some plastic bases that they fit in. I think this is a really smart move because the detailed plastic miniatures in these games are always really nice. But it's also really important to be able to recognize the characters from the show. This is a licensed product and very thematically linked to a television series. So it's kind of neat to be able to say that you're playing Admiral William Adama and see Edward James Olmos's face there on the token.
And it really helped, I think, keep the cost down, too, by not doing the molded plastic miniatures and just doing the picture chits.
Helped. That's one thing I forgot to mention was that the retail price of this game is $40, which a lot of hobby board games these days are running for $50 or $60. So it's real nice to find a game of this quality that you can get for only $40.
Excellent value.
You're going to get character sheets, one for each character, and that'll depict their special abilities and some other things. So you'll have that in front of you. Now, just because they didn't make plastic characters in this game doesn't mean that you're not going to get some neat plastic pieces to play with. You are going to get some ships, the Cylon Raiders, Heavy Raiders, Vipers, and then also the Human Raptors. You get some plastic ships to represent those.
It is a Fantasy Flight game. I mean, they got to have something.
Oh yeah, I mean, you got to throw some of that, that stuff in. You're going to get a whole bunch of cards. There's lots of different kinds of cards in two different sizes. You're going to get some skill cards, and we'll talk a lot about skill cards coming up when we talk about a game turn. There's five different decks of those and five different colors. You're going to have some quorum cards. If you happen to be the player who's the president, they have a special deck of cards that they use. And then you're also going to have loyalty cards. Those are the cards that are dealt at the beginning to determine whether you are a Cylon or whether you are a human. So like I mentioned, the skill cards come in five colors. Red for piloting skills, green for leadership, yellow for politics, purple for tactics, and blue for engineering. The cards are going to have actions on them that you can use during your turn, and they're also going to have a value, a particular numeric value, that will be used when determining skill checks. Skill checks are a main core mechanic of the game, and we'll talk about that in just a second. Another thing you're going to get is just a bunch of cardboard tokens, as Fantasy Flight is wont to do, lots of things to mark things on your cards and so forth. For example, civilian ships in this game, rather than having plastic miniatures for civilian ships, they all have a generic cardboard token that just represents a Dratus contact. And so that's
not a radar, if you're unfamiliar with the show.
Right, yeah, that's their term for radar. And also the Cylon base stars, which are the giant base ships for the Cylons, they decided to go a cardboard route with those. And so there's two very large cardboard tokens to mark the base stars. So you're going to start off by choosing your character, and then the president and admiral roles will be assigned, depending on which character you've chosen. So even if you're playing with three players, and this game is for 3 to 6 players, even with three players, you're going to still have an admiral and a president. And so once those roles are assigned, you're going to set up the game board, which will start out actually with a Cylon base star and three raiders, positioned right out front of the ship.
It's only fitting.
Oh yeah, I mean, you got to start off at a disadvantage if you're a human player. And so then at this point, the loyalty cards are going to be handed out. And depending on how many players you have in your game, you're going to build a loyalty deck that'll have a certain number of cards in it. It's usually going to be twice the number of players because you're going to hand out a set of cards at the very beginning of the game. And then halfway through the game, there'll be a phase called the sleeper agent phase where more cards will be handed out. We'll talk about that in just a second. But if you get your card and it says you are not a Cylon, congratulations, you're not a Cylon. If you get a card that says that you are a Cylon, guess what?
Treachery.
Absolutely. You are a Cylon. And so therefore, you will be playing your game with a slightly different set of rules where you're going to be secretly working against the humans and trying to cause their destruction.
Much like the traitor in Shadows Over Camelot, if you've played that.
Yeah, I think a lot of comparisons can be drawn to Shadows Over Camelot. Although I'll just go ahead and say up front, I think this is a much better game than Shadows Over Camelot, personally.
I agree.
There's a lot more going on, but so don't be if you don't like Shadows Over Camelot, do not be scared off by this game. It's definitely a different feel. So after you've gotten your loyalty card and you know whether you're a human or a Cylon, you're pretty much ready to start the game. So let's go over a basic game turn overview. The first thing that you're going to do in your turn is you're going to receive skill cards. And that's going to be based upon the colors and the amounts that are listed on your character sheet. So for example, someone like Apollo might have two piloting cards, a couple of leadership cards, maybe a politics card thrown in. And so you're going to get your full measure of cards. It might be anywhere, I think it's about 5 cards usually per player. So you'll get all those cards. Then you're going to have a movement step. And on your movement phase, you can move anywhere. If you're on Battlestar Galactica, you can move anywhere on the ship to any location. If you want to move between ships, between the Galactica and the Colonial One.
Which is like Air Force One in space.
Right. Yeah, that's where the president lives and hangs out. Then you have to discard a skill card to be able to move between the ships. And then you can move to whatever location on the ship that you want to. So after your movement phase, you're going to have your action phase, where you can perform one action. And there's a lot of different places to choose from for where you can get your action from. Either on the space that you're standing on a skill card, they're going to have actions. On your character sheet, there might be an action there. If you're a Cylon, then your loyalty card is going to have an action where you can reveal yourself as a Cylon and wreak some havoc on the human players. So there's lots of different options, but you can only do one action per turn. After you've completed that action, then that moves on to the crisis phase. Now, if you've ever played Shadows Over Camelot, this is the equivalent of drawing a black card, the evil action in the game.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Or if you've ever played the game Pandemic, which is another cooperative game, it'd be like drawing an infection card at the end of your turn. So it's the game playing against you, basically.
The bad phase.
The bad phase, right. So you're going to draw a crisis card. The active player will draw a crisis card and then resolve it. Now, there are 3 basic kinds of crisis cards. One is just an all-out Cylon invasion. So you're going to add a base star, add some raiders, add some heavy raiders to the board. There's also a card that will be given to either the president or the admiral, and they will have to make a difficult decision. And it's usually the choosing between two equally bad things that you have to do. And so the president or the admiral player will have to make that decision. Adds an interesting element because if the president or admiral player is a Cylon and is a secret, unrevealed Cylon, then they can make a decision that will be worse for the humans.
Yeah, it can get really evil really quickly.
Right, and you'll find if you're playing this that it won't take too long before the accusations will start flying as to who's a Cylon.
And that's the part where I shine. It's a second turn, I'm already accusing people and...
Yeah, we played a 4-player game of this with my wife and also our good gaming buddy, Single L. And boy, literally by the second turn, Cody had my wife in quite a tizzy, thinking that she was a Cylon and she was trying to defend herself. And
they're all around us, dear listeners. I mean, check yourself.
And so then the third kind of skill card, the third kind of crisis card is a skill check card, and this is a real main mechanic in the game, and it's some kind of bad thing that's going to happen to you unless you can pass a skill check. A skill check will have a particular value to it on the card, as well as a set of colors which will correspond with the skill cards that can be used to put positively towards the outcome of the skill. So just to give you an example here, let's say you had a crisis with a strength of 12. What would then happen is, and then that crisis, you have to spend yellow or red cards. What will then happen is each player will take some of their skill cards and will contribute to this skill check. They'll discard the cards face down into one big pile. And then to add kind of an unknown element, there's a thing called the Destiny Deck. At the very beginning of the game, you start off by putting two cards from each skill deck into one pile, and you shuffle them up together. So there's going to be two random cards from that Destiny Deck that's added to this skill check. Once everybody has added cards, and you're not required to, once everybody has added cards, then the active player will add their cards, shuffle up all of the cards, and then we'll begin to deal them out and look at the values on them. So in the example I gave where you had a skill check of 12 and you needed to use yellow and red cards, all of the yellow and red cards will add up positively towards that total of 12. But any cards that are not yellow or red, that aren't of the color that's on the crisis card, will count negatively. If you see a whole lot of negative cards coming out, you know that two of those cards could come from the Destiny deck. That could just be your bad luck. But if you see more cards than that, then you know there's probably a Cylon among you that is working against you.
Treachery.
So if you pass a skill check, usually the good thing that happens is that no bad thing happens.
It's not a real cheery game.
No, it's really not. But if you fail the skill check, then that will cause bad things to happen, such as losing resources. Depending on what the nature of the crisis is, you might damage some of your ships, or a piece of Galactica might break or something like that. So
a whole piece?
The whole piece of Galactica might just...
Side of the ship will fall
just
off.
Just fell right off there.
Nice.
So, and so that's kind of how the skill check works. After you've resolved that, then there's also potentially two more icons on the crisis card. In the bottom left, there might be an icon that indicates some kind of movement of the Cylons, either the Raiders, the Heavy Raiders, or the Base Star. Depending on the icon, it might actually, things might move, or they might attack you, or they might attack other ships. So that will happen no matter whether you pass the skill check or not. The other icon that would be on the bottom right of your card is the one that's really important to the humans, and that's the one that is the faster than light drive, or the FTL drive icon. On the board, there's a track for the FTL drive, and you know, if you remember, one of the points of the game is that you're trying to jump and gain more distance so that you can get closer to Cobol. But you can't jump the ship every turn. There's actually a track that shows you have to get to a certain point on there before you're able to jump the ship. So by seeing that icon on a crisis card, that'll allow you to move the token, the fleet token, one step closer to being able to jump. So once you've gone a couple of steps down that track, you'll eventually get to a part on the jump track that's blue, and that will allow you to jump the ship. But the very first and then the second blue icons, if you jump at that point, you run the risk of losing some of the ships. Maybe they got the wrong coordinates or something, and they end up getting lost in space somewhere. So if you decide to jump at that point, and it is the Admiral's decision to jump.
Oh, and jump early, jump often was my idea as the Admiral.
Oh, yeah. And Cody loves to roll dice. So
there you go.
The 1d8 that's in the game, he was all about grabbing that. So
hey, we were successful each time.
I think, were we really?
I think so. Yeah, at least when I was a human. Oh, but spoiler.
Yeah. And so, you know, that might cause your population to drop if you don't get the right dice roll. But once the ship successfully jumps, then the Admiral is going to draw two cards from a deck called the Destination Deck. Those cards are going to have the distance points on there that you're looking for. You're trying to get up to 8 distance points. The Admiral is going to look at those two cards, decide which one he wants to keep, and then discard the other one. Again, this is a great power play if your Admiral happens to be a Cylon, because they could choose the worst of the two cards, because you don't get to reveal the other card. So that's an interesting element of the game as well. Once you get past 4 distance in the game, then that will activate the Sleeper Agent phase. And at this point, another loyalty card will be handed out to each player. Now, if you were originally a Cylon and you get a card that says you're not a Cylon, sorry, you're still a Cylon.
You can't shake that.
But if you started off as not a Cylon and you get a card that says that you are a Cylon, well, it turns out that you were a sleeper agent and you didn't know you were a Cylon, but now you are.
I was a sleeper agent, and a little part of me I always knew.
Yeah, I knew too. Let me tell you. It's an interesting element of the game because halfway through the game, your strategy can completely change.
Right. It really keeps your interest. That's a big shakeup because pretty much all the hard work you've done as a human may be all for naught when you're a dirty Cylon and you now have to crash the ship instead of help the ship get to COBOL.
Right. So you can, even after this sleeper agent phase, you'll continue to play through your turns. If you choose to take the action to reveal yourself as a Cylon, it sort of changes your strategy. Again, it's akin to like being the traitor in Shadows Over Camelot. It changes what your game turn is going to look like. And you'll pretty much spend the rest of the game wreaking havoc on the humans and possibly waiting for the right moment to play your Super Crisis card.
Super Crisis.
Yep. Once you reveal yourself as a Cylon, you're given one of these five really bad Super Crisis cards that wreak additional terrible havoc on the humans.
Right. And even if you're a revealed Cylon, the great thing about the game is the mechanic essentially stays the same. You get one action. It's just your set of actions as a Cylon will be a little differently themed than the humans.
Right. And so that's basically the game. It's this constant struggle between the humans trying to get those distance cards and make those jumps and the Cylons trying to whittle away at the defenses of the humans. One interesting thing to mention that I forgot about the jumping phase is that once you jump the ship, any Cylon ships that are around your ship go away. So
leave them in the dust.
That's right. So and then they'll just start to accumulate after a while. But it has this kind of nice ebb and flow to it where there's this tension of, oh my gosh, all these Cylon forces are building up. It's going to destroy the ship. And then you jump at the last minute and then they all go away and you're calm for a little while. And so this kind of cycle goes throughout the game. And it not only is it extremely thematic and really fits with the theme of the show. As a matter of fact, if you've ever watched the show and have seen the episode 33, which is, I think, the first regular episode of the first season, it really plays a lot like that episode. So
constantly on the run.
Just constantly on the run. And constantly with the Cylons at your heels. My overall impression of this game is extremely positive. I think that someone who hasn't seen the show would really enjoy it. Actually, our gaming friend Single L, he said that he has never seen the show and completely loved the game and didn't have any problem fitting into the theme or understanding the mechanics of the game. So Cody, why don't you chime in? Just tell me what you thought about BSG, the board game.
Well, like you were mentioning, how well do you have to know the show? That was a big factor with me because if I'm going to plunk down the money for it, it needs to be something where I can play with everyone else and none of them have seen the show and it still is playable. And it really does that. I mean, it's not a hard concept to grasp if you've never seen the show. It's a lot of us are good guys. One of you is a bad guy, or potentially more than one of you is a bad guy.
Right. So every episode on Buy, Try, or Deny, we're going to give you our rating for the game. And so let me go ahead and ask you this question, Cody, for Battlestar Galactica, the board game. Buy, try, or deny?
I've got to start this one off with a buy. At first, I was expecting maybe a try as we went on, but just playing the game and how smooth the flow of the game was, once you get the rules down, this game just flies. And it's a detailed game, but it doesn't get swamped in the details. You have so many options, but the gameplay goes by so quickly that you never feel overwhelmed. And it's like you were mentioning, the tension and the drama and accusing the other players of a Cylon. If they're a Cylon, which usually they're not, if I'm the one accusing them, it really gets exciting. And before you know it, you're at that critical jump or that critical turn where the Cylons could finally do you in. So a very enthusiastic buy. Even if you don't watch the show, definitely pick this one up.
And I would have to give an emphatic agreement on that. This is definitely a buy. This is was by far the best game that I bought at Gen Con this year. I think it's the best game Fantasy Flight has put out in quite a while, and that's in great company. They put out a lot of great games.
Definitely. They don't make a lot of duds. No. they make a lot of good quality stuff.
But this was just completely blew me away. I was really expecting it to be pretty good and pretty thematic, but the interweaving of theme and mechanics is just fantastic in this game. And so I give it really one of my highest recommendations for a game. So it's a definite buy.
I went in expecting very little from this game, thinking it was just a money grab, but it's one of the best games I've played in years.
So that wraps it up for our first buy, try, or deny segment, Battlestar Galactica the board game.
Hey, we made it. It was great.
Fantastic.
Well, it's about time to close out the show. We'd like to thank you, of course, first for listening to our inaugural podcast here.
We are honored.
Yeah, we are honored, and we hope you stick around and subscribe to us. Check out our website, GameOnPodcast.com.
That's GameOnPodcast.com.
And you can, of course, check us out on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you might use. We plan on doing a bi-weekly release schedule, so make sure you subscribe and keep up on all the latest Game On with Cody and John news. And we'd like to mention again our contest. All you have to do is send an email to the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's gameoninbox@gimeo.com.
You do a great echo.
Thank you very much.
And all you have to do is mention your favorite game, and even if it's Carcassonne, you will be eligible for the contest.
A little less eligible, but
oh,
still.
No, you'll still be eligible. Just kidding. I like it. But again, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Game on.
In this, our premiere episode. Oh. Ew.
An auspicious beginning.
An auspicious beginning.
Let's just release that.